That's it. I'm going live, Gavin. It doesn't even matter anymore. You're going to have to figure this one out on your own time and not on the listener's time, because we're 5 whole minutes past our 9 o'clock time slot.
I know. So. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm doing my usual thing where I scroll through and do the copy and paste
to tell people we are live.
Gotta tell people we're live.
You don't gotta tell people, Gavin. You just gotta schedule it from now on. I don't know if you know this, by the way. Riverside now automatically kicks off the YouTube stream for you.
It does do that.
Yeah, because we did this last week with Bryce, and we were like, oh, Gavin's not around to hit the button on YouTube, and then I was like, wait a second, this says live, and then we both went to our phones and we looked at the MLS Now YouTube account, and we were
it did work like that.
Yeah, so
well,
in
the article I read, it said the opposite. It said you have to go to the YouTube or live thing to prepare.
Crazy that you can't believe everything you read on the internet, because if you look right now, Gavin, at the top of our studio, you're gonna see it live and rec. And what you'll notice is that if you go to YouTube and you were to click on the MLS Now podcast YouTube channel, you would see that we are, in fact, live.
But today I did the thing that I thought I needed to do, you know?
Mm.
You pick it up what I'm putting down?
I'm smelling what you're stepping in, Gavin, and I'm here to tell you that you don't need to do that anymore.
Okay. You got it. Hey, while we're on this topic, to our listeners who usually listen post live stream, turn on our YouTube notifications. We say every Monday at 9, usually a minute or two late, 9-ish. Don't sue us. But turn on our YouTube notifications so your phone tells you, hey, MLS Now podcast is recording their episode. They're live. Well, all right, sorry, I'm taking forever.
Are we recording the episode at this point, or are we broadcasting an episode at this point? So,
I guess both.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
There we go.
All right.
Today I learned.
I'm really far behind. Sorry.
Hi, far behind. I'm Russell. You can find me on social media at Mr. Dangerous.
Is that how we're getting started? Is that what we're doing?
Gavin, of course.
Dad joking.
Dad joke. Gavin, there's never a bad time for dad jokes. You know what else there's never a bad time for?
What?
All right.
That's right, Gavin. It's never a bad time for the MLS Now podcast. I'm your host, Russell. You can find me on social media at Mr. Danger Russ. You can find the podcast on social media at MLS Now podcast. And you can find us on the website at MLSNowPodcast.com. Folks, I'm here to tell you it was foretold in the books. It was foretold on social media. That's right. The prodigal son has returned to us, which means we have to walk back our statements last week that he hates us. Obviously, you know, retcon it. We're going to write it out of the lore, the history. We're taking it all away. And remember, if you want to reach out to him personally to tell him that you always believed he would return and that he never hated us, you can find Gavin on social media at LionsBlog1. Gavin, welcome back. I never doubted you for a second, except for that time on the podcast last week when I did, in fact, very publicly doubt you. It's good to have you back. Hello.
What? I haven't had a chance to listen to the episode, so... thanks for the prodigal son, everything. Just quickly, Soccer Addict says every time is a bad time for a dad joke. So I'm on his side there.
Never a bad time for a dad joke. It goes
along
with the territory, Gavin.
Yeah, good to be back. We're both repping some merch, it seems. You've got on the hoodie. I love our hoodies.
Vintage
hoodie, long time ago. And then last year we did the scarf run, and so I'm repping the scarf. I actually like this scarf. So we're not selling them anymore, I don't think. But my favorite part about this scarf is what, Russell, you kind of helped with the whole. It's kind of backwards, but if you look, we put in all the cities of all the team names. So like there's Kansas City right there. There's Los Angeles. Yep. We probably should have did Carson, in all honesty.
Well, Carson is on there.
Are they on there? Okay.
Yeah,
we did
Los Angeles. Yeah.
We did Fort Lauderdale as well. Like, we weren't messing around.
No,
we were not messing around.
We weren't.
So.
Absolutely not. All the shade that teams got, they got deservedly.
Yeah. I do really like these scarves. They are really, really nice. So, yeah. We're repping some stuff.
I'm looking right underneath it, Gavin. I actually see Carson right underneath LA.
Oh, shoot. Really?
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Carson, California. Yep. Sandy, Utah. Oh, man. All the shade. I love it. I love it.
Hey, if they don't want their names on there like that, then build your stadium in the city you claim that you represent.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. All right, we got... I'm assuming we have a long episode in front of us, considering the last two times you and I recorded, we went 2 hours.
Well, see, here's the thing. When I recorded with Bryce last week, we also went 2 hours, and then I cut it down to like an hour and 50 minutes, and I patted myself on the back for that one, saying, really well done. But here's the thing, Gavin. I wanted to wear some MLS merch, which has a double effect of also making me want to make this a quick episode because it's 85 degrees in Ohio. Which is
that's not normal.
Yeah, no, this is this did set a new record for the hottest day on record for this point of the year, according to the National Weather Service. So the last time it was this hot was 1976. So
that's rough.
Quite warm.
It was pretty hot here in Florida too. We were hitting like high 80s here in Orlando. It was pretty rough.
Yeah, I believe it, Gavin. I do believe it because generally you are warmer than Ohio.
Generally speaking, yep.
Well, hey, Gavin, look, we missed our tradition last week. We can't miss it this week. Drink check. What you got going today? I've got a killer brownie from Warped Wing Brewing Company out of Dayton, Ohio. It actually, gotta say, really solid. It says it's a brown ale, but it almost tastes more like a chocolate stout in that it's very rich and very chocolatey. And
interesting.
More on the heavy side of a brown ale, so really quite enjoyable. I was pleasantly surprised picking this one up. I think I got it from Trader Joe's. So Trader Joe's, excellent work as always on your identification of reasonably priced craft alcohol.
I'm drinking some good old-fashioned H2O.
Okay, Ronaldo.
Nah, man, it's been a rough couple weeks for the liver. I needed some fair water enough. Tonight.
You know, I was drinking water earlier today with the sun coming out, and you know, on the last episode, I was drinking coffee at like 9:30 at night. So we gotta get back to the norm here.
That's rough. Yeah, that's a little rough, even for you.
It's not, Gavin. I'll drink coffee at midnight. I'll drink, you know, an espresso shot after dinner. I'll have a Turkish coffee. I love Turkish coffee. I'll have a Turkish coffee after dinner, and I'll.
Do like, you think it even does out, anything? Like, does no. it even do anything for you anymore? Are you no, just doing it just to do it?
I think I'm going through the motions at this point, Gavin. I'm just a shell of a human being who's, you know, no longer getting that lift from caffeine. And I'm just drinking it, hoping against hope that some semblance of energy in life will come back to me. I say as though I'm not highly energetic and literally always blowing up your phone at 7 a.m. every day. So clearly I don't need the caffeine is really what it comes down to. My body just looks at it and is like, nope, I... Get that out of here. We don't need it. Send it somewhere else. So,
yeah, you're a madman. All right, let's go ahead get started.
No, Gavin, I want to waffle for like 15 minutes. How are we going to hit this?
We did that last time. I think people are here for the content around MLS, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Well, Gavin, I'm going to launch us on into the big story of the week, and I've titled it as such. Taking a cue from a critically acclaimed quote unquote movie, perfectly balanced as all things should be. Gavin, this weekend had a lot of balance. I would even say that nature is healing, because here's the thing. All through the early parts of the season, we talked about the replacement referees and, you know, fair pay for fair play. We talked about how we wanted the real pro referees back. Gavin, I am here to tell you that people are officially sick of them. The, you know, unrequited criticism, the calling out of double standards, the shade being thrown at referees, it's back. You know, it's returned in full. Nobody likes the referees again. Truly, we are perfectly balanced right where we ought to be for this league. You actually made an excellent point, though, in that the overall tone of the league across the weekend is very close in nature. A lot of really close matches. There was not much in the way of blowouts. You had tons of one-goal matches. You had a fair number of draws. I mean, it's almost like a parody league actually worked as far as, you know, what you would expect from a parity league over the weekend. I mean, even in the standings, it's not like you've got a fully segmented set of standings yet, although there is some separation, you know, between the tops and the bottoms, but you know, it's still early, so it's minimal in nature. Gavin, which do you want to tackle first? Do you want to tackle talking about the teams, which we're going to do soon, anyways, after this, or would you like to talk instead about refereeing and how we've, you know, really returned to what it's all about, which is, as a, you know, as a league, as all fan bases, we're here to rally together and say it's not good enough. We hate this inconsistency. They got it wrong. They're game altering decisions. Grumble, grumble, grumble. You know, we're out here in the Twitter mob full force.
Yeah, I don't have much more to say on the referee discourse, unfortunately. I think you will recall, our listeners will recall my take on this, which is pro wasn't that great to begin with. The replacement referees, you know, they were doing as well as they could. And I didn't understand the full clamor for the refs to come back because of the quality of the replacement refs. I wanted the pro refs to come back. Yes, they are a little bit better, but it wasn't that huge of a delta. For me, it was just on a human level. Like, let's get these guys their jobs back, please. Like, that's what I was more worried about. Let's pay them appropriately. But in terms of on the field, pro has had so many issues for so long. I never really felt that the quality was that much different. And we're seeing that this week. We'll talk about it later. We don't have to get too in-depth in it right now. So yeah, perfectly balanced as all things should be. We're hating on the refs again.
Absolutely. Like I said, nature is healing. Next thing you know, high prices on concessions will be even higher. The never-ending march towards, you know, unsustainable stadium fare really is just going to be back in full force. Hey, as a side note, my official proposition, my proposal, if you will, on how to fix refereeing, bring some drama and accountability into it by having coach challenges. I think we've talked about this as like a general idea before, but I've given a few more thoughts to this. You know, a benefit of having a coach's or like a manager's challenge would be, Gavin, if you're a referee that's constantly getting challenged, and then you have like an independent panel, right? Like put three guys in a room somewhere like VAR, and you know, it's going to take a majority of those three people has to either agree or disagree with the challenge. So it's not just one person, but you give three independent people. If you want to break them up into different rooms so they don't influence each other, whatever, however you end up making that look like, but give like a three-person majority vote decision to either agreeing or disagreeing with the challenge. And here's the thought. If you're a referee and every week you're getting two or three challenges and you're always losing them, like the coaches always know better and it's always getting overturned, eventually you're going to be like, hey, I can't keep forever looking like I'm bad at my job. Like eventually there's going to be some self-accountability there. Or if nothing else, at least when the coaches who presumably know the sport and know what should and shouldn't be a violation of the rules, when they throw in that challenge, then you still get the net effect of having a correct call as the end result. And if that pushes some referees to maybe increase their own standards of performance, then that's just a happy side effect.
So what you're talking about there is essentially referee KPIs, referees setting KPIs around challenges and calls being the outcome of those challenges. I would hope, and if there aren't any, I'm going to be very upset, but I would hope that there would already be an existing KPIs where every single professional match, or maybe you're in quality, right? You know how quality works. Maybe, well, you're more in compliance, I guess, but quality audits and whatnot. I would hope that there is, whether it's every game or every three games of a ref or some sort of thing, they have a checklist of things that they're checking to make sure that these refs are consistently performing at the top level. If there isn't anything like that, which I'm sure there is, we have some huge problems. I like the idea of challenges. I think it's interesting how they would interact with VAR. Would it only be a challenge kicks off VAR and a coach has three challenges in a game? I don't know what that looks like,
But I like the idea of challenges and putting the onus in the coach's hands to kick off the review. And if then that kind of gives something else for the coach to think about, like, oh, do I use all of my challenges early? Like, we'll have some coaches that are super aggressive with challenges. We'll have some coaches who are not aggressive with challenges and like to hold back. And, you know, that could also play into some media discussion points as well. Oh, the coach had two challenges left. It's the 81st minute. Why didn't he use one of them in this scenario? Like, there's stuff like that that could come out of it. I've always thought the challenges thing is interesting. But then again, how does that interact with VAR? That's what I'd be thinking. But yeah, I like the idea overall.
Yeah, I think to your point, you would have to see a change with VAR if you were to institute this. And maybe you just say no VAR unless it is something that is like a penalty, like a huge game-changing moment, right? Like it has to be very, very like egregious. Otherwise, like if someone gets called offsides on a goal, you can challenge it if you think it's wrong. But otherwise, it's just like pre-VAR, where you're relying on the linesman to have got it correct. And maybe you could even draw the conclusion that there is less high performance in officiating now due to the fact that they know VAR exists and they can think, well, it's close. I'll, you know, if I get it wrong, VAR will catch it. And VAR might not catch it. There's plenty of times that VAR misses it. So,
and in some instances, the refs are explicitly told to do that, to not call it, right? The offsides thing where players get and coaches get so frustrated when the ref doesn't raise the flag until the last second, you know, after the play is developed, even though we all know that's when the ref is told to do it if it's tight. So, yeah, it'd be an interesting rollout for sure. Not sure what it would look like.
Look, I'll just say this, Gavin. We love being different here in MLS. Why not just throw one more thing to be different and unique and give, you know, more people reasons to say not a serious league when it comes to MLS? You know, just lean into it at this point.
We will for sure be the first league to do sin bin. Like the first top tier league, I think. Yeah, if it does ever get rolled out. So shall we talk about the other aspect? I really want to hit on quick.
Absolutely, Gavin.
The overall balance. The balance of the league. I mean, if we just look at the table really quick, in the Eastern Conference, we all knew it was going to be close, right? But between first place and 10th place, there's a 5-point gap. Still early in the season, but that's not a lot of a gap. Just two games there. And then in the West, again, just as close, between first place and 9th place, a 5-point gap. So not sure how that tracks across seasons. I'd have to go and look. But it just feels like it's a little bit more tighter, and we're not really seeing what we've seen in the past where it's like first through fifth are like really good teams and they're picking up a lot of points. And then sixth through 10th is another group. And then 11th through 14th is another group. And it's like these tiers, we're not seeing a lot of tiers right now. We're just seeing like points are being thrown around everywhere. And it's really hard to tell who's good, who's not good. What's going on?
I'll tell you this, Gavin. It makes it hard for us on our weekly sports betting segment because I continue to just like, I'll get 2 out of 3 consistently every single week. And
I thought I had three locks for sure.
Yeah. My biggest win of the weekend wasn't even an MLS. It was betting against Arsenal to choke it away against Aston Villa. And that paid out quite handsomely. So I cleaned up there, but yeah,
All right. Any thoughts on maybe not why? I was going to go with why, but I feel like that's so clear.
Like why we've heard that away matches.
No, MLS Now podcast. The league aims for parity, and it's getting it. This is a successful start to the season if your goal as a league is parity.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, this would be, even with a Messi, Busquets, Jordi Alba, loaded Inter Miami side, you still have Inter Miami not even, I don't think they're even in first place. Like, there's plenty of teams competing with them on results, and Miami is even picking up losses along the way. So, yeah, I mean, it is like the system's working as intended.
And so I'll ask you this, and I don't know the right answer. Is that what the fans want, right? Because would it be better to have those top dogs that we've kind of had, right? Like, we've had Columbus, we've had New England Revolution, in the past we've had LA Galaxy, LAFC, to have those top dogs who are like really, really good, and then someone beats them, and that's the storyline for the week, is LAFC have fallen at home against Sporting Kansas City or something like that, right? Like, is it almost better to have that than to have all 29 to 30 teams within the relative same quality bracket? Like, yeah, there's some teams who are clearly below that, but right now it feels like no one is breaking away from the pack. Literally no one. The supporter shield could land to, like, it feels like 8 different teams right now in the current state.
I'm personally okay with it. And here's why, Gavin. I think MLS has the roster mechanisms and it has the turnover in teams to allow you to have a 2 to 4 year dynasty. If you have, you know, really good advantageous contracts and players break out early in those contracts and don't plan to go anywhere, then you can set up for those 2 to 4 year dynasties. That's a pretty good run. And with the way that the playoffs work and with the way that, you know, knockout competition functions, you might be looking at 1, maybe 2 MLS Cups, right? But it's not dominant. You're not getting a Bayern Munich type thing. You're not getting 11 straight wins of MLS. You're not getting, you know, 3 teams that are winning MLS Cup in the span of 20 years. You're getting teams that can turn things over after being horrific. And I think, one, it keeps players and it keeps coaches and it keeps managers and fan bases on their toes, knowing that anything could change at the drop of a hat. One season can be enough to turn things around. But it also rewards teams without giving them too much of a benefit in the way of building a really strong roster. Because ultimately, that roster will stay strong for only a limited period of time. You still have to deliver the goods in the future, identifying new talent and still fitting that talent within the roster mechanisms and finding those, you know, diamonds in the rough, developing the talent from the homegrown standpoint that gets those subsidies, that lets you get the additional, you know, high paid players that are more sure things, if you will. So, yeah, I mean, I would, on paper, right, and especially this season, I would say, it looks like the roster rules are doing what you would expect of them to generate a league where anyone can win it.
Well said. That's all I had on it, but I just wanted to hit real quick on the fact that the whole league is pretty close to quality.
Yeah, you're throw darts at a board and see what you hit at this point. Like,
yeah, predicting is ridiculous. I thought for sure Red Bulls over Chicago, lock all day. They're gonna win that game at home.
Yep. Nope. I thought Philly over Atlanta was a lock all day, and it very nearly was. And we'll talk about that later.
I wouldn't have had that as a lock. So
I had it as a lock, and it very. Some could say that it was in fact a lock, if not for some interesting decisions on the field by the refereeing crew. However, that's not the first match in our series of matches. And Gavin, we're going to do some special bylines this week. I'm going to pretend that I'm a newspaper reporter writing a headline to lead us into all these matches. Portland 2, LAFC 2. Portland gets starstruck by LA after jumping to an early lead, only to find out their Hollywood dream was in fact a dream. They ended out in a draw, Gavin.
Yeah, this one was really the, that's funny, the headline thing. If I were to have a headline for this one, I would say it was the Evander versus Bogush show. Both of them put on a show for their respective teams. They were both playing well individually. They both contributed heavily to the four goals in the match. So they were my main talking points of this game. Evander, I'm starting to see some chatter. Is he one of the best number 10s in the league? I think so. He's really stepping up this season so far for Portland, who I think... Do Portland have the most goals in the league?
They might have the most goals and the most goals conceded, if I'm being
honest. No, Miami has the most goals, but they have one more game played. Portland have 16. Okay, Galaxy have 17, and Miami have 19. So they have the third most goals, but they've also played one game less than Miami. So... Evander's been key to that for Portland, but you're right. They've been rough on defense as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's certainly interesting. I think LAFC as well are interesting to me as well this season. We talked about how they were losing a lot of players who were impact-type players from previous years, and there were some questions about, you know, what sort of leadership they would have. Would they have that same sort of end product? Would they have the consistency? And guys like, you know, Bogush, for instance, they're not always week over week amazing, but they're starting to step up, right? They're starting to be these next players that kind of jump off the paper, where if you were building, say, a fantasy team, you might be like, oh, gotta grab Bogush from LA, you know, guys and everything, or gotta grab Buonga from LA, you know, guys getting goals like every, say, like two matches at the worst, maybe even sometimes, you know, two goals in three matches, like producing really well. Not to say that Buonga wasn't an impact player last year, but again, it's the names that jump off the paper for LA are cycling over, and you're starting to see those guys take their next step. So I think that's important from them. Maybe even, you know, Shirondolo and his tactics might play into that as well. You know, loath to give him too many flowers because it seems like he likes to have an excuse every time they lose, but you know,
he deserves some flowers. Yeah. He's a good coach. But I will say, LAFC were up a man for the majority of the second half. Crepeau got the red card in the 48th minute, and then Bogush scores the associated free kick with the red card. And so 2-2 the rest of the half to play. You would think traditional LAFC would win that game. I thought that was going to happen too. You know, I was watching the game, I was like, oh, LAFC are going to do this. And at times Portland looked the better team at 10 men. They looked the more dangerous team, and they would fall back into their shape, and LAFC really struggled. And I was really looking at the bench for LAFC at that point, and I was like, there's not a whole lot there, right? I think they are in desperate need of Olivier Giroud just to have another threat going forward. And that means one of their players who are starting right now, Bogush is the current player through the middle, playing pretty well, but Olivier Giroud, maybe he drops to the bench. But other than that, like Kai Kamara on the bench, Nathan Ordaz comes on, doesn't really do much. Oliveira started, didn't have a great game. I mean, this isn't the LAFC of old. Their depth has really sunk, and that's where I think we're seeing the changes. And in the end, it's a good point for Portland after going down to 10 men 3 minutes into the second half.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you bring up that they looked better. They looked like the better side, I should say,
with 10 men. At times. By the end, LAFC had chances too, of course. But usually you just see a team get deeper and deeper and they can't get out. Portland were getting out and getting attacks going.
Yeah, but to get back to the point here, Gavin, it's not the first time that I've seen a team that goes up a man struggle in this league when playing up a man. And I don't know if that is an issue where the creativity going forward for sides that are up a man, maybe either they don't have the level of quality to break down a team sitting really deep, or if they're just not drilling against it, if the tactics break down once you get to a point where you're being allowed to have, you know, that extra possession in midfield, and maybe you're not seeing teams go forward as much, so that ability to like hit a team on the counter goes away. There's a lot of teams in MLS that play on the counter. And once you lose that, I think some teams start to struggle. So again, not the only team, not the only team this week for that matter, that struggled going up a man. So that's all I have to say, at least on Portland LAFC. Anything else you want to throw in there before we move on?
Nope. Let's move on.
All right. Well, we're going to go next to Montreal 2, Cincinnati 1. Cincinnati left reeling from the impact of the loss to Montreal. Gavin, where to even start? First of all, Montreal, enigma this season. I mean, certainly much better than I think either of us thought they would be going in. I think Laurent Courtois, their coach, learned under Wilfred Nancy. Wilfred Nancy, you and I have, you know, pretty much in agreement, probably the best coach in the league right now. So really good pedigree, really good person to learn from, is making Montreal look better than the sum of their parts by a significant margin. Just full stop. And I think that's one of the highest sets of praise you can give to a coach.
Totally agree. Yep.
From the Cincinnati side, I'm going to be honest, they look less than the sum of their parts at this point. I mean, this is now 2 weeks in a row that they've had a horrendous looking midfield, unable to possess the ball, unable to get forward, players not looking for each other. It's dire, I think, right now for Cincinnati. Their best striker option, if you will, at the moment is Yuya Kubo, who at an earlier point in the season was playing right back for them, and last year was playing defensive midfield for them. So real questions to be asked here as to what's actually going on in Cincinnati. And I don't know if it's even necessarily an adjustment thing anymore. We've talked about how it's like, oh, well, it can take 6 months for players to adjust to MLS. Upenza has been in MLS now for almost a year. He's not producing at the level that you would expect of a player that's a designated player. And Gavin, hear me out on this. Designated players are starting to adapt better to MLS. Look at guys like Luis Suarez, who's come in and is like leading the league or close to it on goals and assists. Look at guys like, you know, João Klaus. I guess João Klaus technically had, you know, a little bit more of a runway, but get guys like Denny Buonga, who, well, Buonga had a slow start as well. So maybe that one's not. Actually, he came in as TAM initially, didn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and then once he got that DP contract, he exploded. So that's a very interesting one. Evander pretty much started off hot, and he's only getting better. Cucho, when he came in, became a turning point for Columbus, looked amazing from day one. Giakoumakis for Atlanta, again, turning point day one. I don't think Muyumba's a DP, but he, again, came in and shored up Atlanta's midfield. I mean, like, there's a pretty good track record of these important signings starting to take the league more seriously and come in better prepared to produce and be worth the money that teams are paying for them. So at this point, I don't know what's going on with Cincinnati. And I say that as a Cincinnati fan, I have no idea what's going on behind the scenes for them, but they need to figure it out, or they need to start making a plan to move on from players or move on from the system, because it's not working. Just full stop.
Yeah, I mean, you guys lost a lot of talent in the offseason, and you replaced them with names, right? With good names. And on paper, they should fit into the system, but every player is different. There's going to be little nuances here and there that a player might make a different type of decision. A player might be a little bit more aggressive, whereas one of your other players from last season would have been a little bit more cautious. And so that helped you have a better defense in that very specific scenario. You know, there's a million different things, right? That these are humans after all. And so, you know, you lose one of the best strikers in the league in Vasquez, replace him with Corey Baird, who was running hot last season. His track record has shown that last season was a blip. Could he keep that momentum? right now he's not, right? Like, you're saying your best striker is Kubo. And I remember I said a few seasons ago, if you've got Corey Barrett in your attack, like, what are you doing? Like, he shouldn't be starting. And you guys were kind of reliant on him continuing that hot form. It would have looked like a shrewd piece of business had it worked. Right now it hasn't. Not saying he won't hit that form again. It is what it is. But then the other thing I was going to mention as well is, like, a lot of names, but also the guys that came back. To some extent, there's always going to be a dip. Like, the level that your players were at, I mean, Lucio Costa was winning games for you every single week, it felt like. And he was even doing that earlier this season. But eventually, you know, it can't be the Lucci show. There's got to be some team effort to win games. And we've seen that happen with, like, Hani Mukhtar. We've seen that happen with Nacho Heal. Like, these guys were, like, peak. Like, playing atop their game, just, like, so good. And eventually, it's going to catch up. The players are going to regress a bit. It's very natural. And so I think there was some maybe assumptions made in the planning for the season that, you know, oh, Lucci Gonzalez will bail us out multiple times again. Oh, Lucci Corey Gonzalez, Lucci Acosta. 1 week off, and I don't even know who I'm talking about anymore.
Look, Lucci Gonzalez did bail someone out this week, but it wasn't Cincinnati.
Fair enough. You know what I meant. Lucci Acosta is going to bail us out. Corey Barrett's going to run hot. Yuya Kubo is going to be amazing wherever we play him. Like,
right, and he still is. Good on you, Yuya.
A lot of assumptions that maybe haven't come to pass. And right now we're seeing Cincinnati struggle. That's my take. I could be wrong, but that's my take on the matter.
Yeah, I think I like your take because it has more optimism than where mine is. And I'm going to hope that your take is right. But from a Cincinnati perspective, if the alarm bells are not, you know, blaring and the lights aren't, you know, flashing like, hey, warning, danger, I don't know how much more, you know, you need to see beyond these past couple weeks of what's been going on. So I really feel like, you know, we're not giving enough kind of praise to Montreal here because they could have had much more than two goals. They looked pretty good. They looked motivated. They came out. They got revenge for giving up five goals to Seattle, who are not a phenomenal team this year. And they put in a big win over the Supporters Shield leaders from last year. So we'll see, though. I mean, it's certainly a big drop off for Cincinnati and many questions there to be asked. One of the, like you said, the big regressions of the season. Other than that, I got nothing else. I'm ready to move on to New York City FC 2, New England Revolution 0. Gavin, New England Revolution plays in Foxborough, but here's the thing. They weren't ready for the battle in the boroughs of New York City as the New York City FC stocks go straight to the moon with this win. What are your thoughts on it, Gavin? Or we can start with our correspondence corner from Coach Joe to set the tone if you want.
Yeah, let's start it with that.
Awesome. Well, let me pull it up.
I've got it up. I'll do it.
Yeah, hit me with it.
All right, Coach Joe, the Joe has a zero instead of an O. He says, New York City FC in the battle, the basement East edition. NYCFC benefited from yet another man of the match performance coming from goalkeeper Matt Freese after 0-0. First half versus the Revs, NYCFC came alive in the second half with Ojeda scoring an absolute banger for his first goal and his first start for the club. Uncharacteristically, the Pigeons were able to secure the ever-elusive second goal to ice the game with a left-footed curler from 25 yards out by Julian Fernandez, man of the match from the club, Augustine Ojeda, man of the match from the fans, Matt Freese. So this one was a lock for me just because Yankee Stadium tax. Like, New York City at Yankee Stadium, I will always lean their way, no matter how bad they are. And this season, they're starting to kind of show that trend again, I think, even with, you know, some late drama against Portland. That's right. It was against Portland. But 2-0
I made some money on that one.
Yeah. Me too. 2-0 against the Revolution, it looks on paper correct. But then when Coach Joe is saying Matt Freese bailed us out, well, there's probably problems there then.
Yeah. Well, I would say there's problems there, but the problems are more with New England and not with NYCFC. I have great Schadenfreude. Porter used to coach the Columbus Crew. Everyone from Cincinnati didn't like Porter. I'm not convinced that people from Columbus actually liked Porter as well, for the record. But seeing another one of Porter's teams kind of struggle, if you will, gives me personal great delight, considering Cincinnati's history and experiences with Porter. But also just in general, Porter hasn't really seemed the same. Just in general. I mean, he did well for a little bit with Columbus Crew, and yes, he got them an MLS Cup, but he started to have a pretty significant backward slide with them, and they started to struggle to see out matches. They started to struggle to have cohesive identity. And now with New England, we know they have phenomenal players on there. I mean, you have Heal, former MVP of the league, and you still can't put up any goals. You're still the worst team in the East. I mean, to me, this seems a coaching problem, not a talent problem.
A lot of these same players were there with Bruce Arena.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It's a coaching problem. It's a coaching problem. It's a culture problem. It's a lot of things that, you know, isn't just on the field with the players themselves. And I feel really bad for them because of what happened last season with Bruce Arena, and the players weren't kept informed. You know, if they were kept informed, maybe there would have been a better turnout. But right now, like you said, they're the worst team in the league. They're playing like the worst team in the league, and or one of the worst teams in the league. I wouldn't put them worst, actually, now that I say that out loud. But they're one of the worst teams in the league. And to where they were second in the East, and second maybe even in the Supporter Shield going into the last like 10 games of the season last year. To where they're at now, it's night and day. It's night and day. And Yankee Stadium tax, I like to say that a lot, but nothing this season has shown me that they are any different than this result or this performance.
100% agree.
And Caleb Porter, bad hire. I think a lot of people said that from the start. So on your point about him specifically, that was not the right guy.
No, it was not the right guy. But, you know, you're asking for a competent hire and, you know, good decision-making process from a team that let the Bruce Arena situation play out the way that it did. So are we surprised that this is the turn that it took?
Absolutely not. So props to New York City FC. They get the dub. They've been kind of up and down this season. Not as bad as last season. So that's been pretty nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to move on to New York Red Bulls 0, Chicago 0. Gavin, I'm putting in an official rule on this one. If you don't score any goals, you don't get any soccer byline, you don't get any fun announcement. Chicago should be disappointed in themselves for not getting anything from this match. Tim, our wonderful contributor, had a great correspondence corner that he just put in here a hot second ago into the group chat that I think is very much worth bringing up right now.
Yeah, I've got it open here. Tim's Timothy Hotz. Let me look at his handle. I always forget
at
it.
@SingElectric.
@Sing_Electric. If you'd offered Fire fans a point in their match against Red Bulls before the game started, they'd have gladly taken it. But walking away with a 0-0 draw, despite playing more than half the game up a man, gives the match the bitter taste of defeat more than the sweet flavor of victory. It's always interesting how some draws feel like a loss, some draws feel like a win, and then other draws just feel like a draw. I can see how this one feels like a loss. Tim says, Shaqiri followed up a strong performance a week before with one that wasn't forgettable. It was so bad as to be memorable. Up a man, it was clear that the Fire are a team that has fewer and fewer ideas the deeper into the final third it gets.
Can they get new ideas in time to face a surging Real Salt Lake team this weekend? Interesting on the Shaqiri thing. I was actually listening to Extra Time either last week or 2 weeks ago. And Matt Doyle made a point about Shaqiri that he never has two good games in a row. And I think last week, Shaqiri had a pretty good game. And Matt Doyle's point was literally, let's see if he can replicate it next week. And so for Tim to say that his performance was god awful,
that's just,
Matt Doyle, he is one of a kind. He's a very smart man. So, seems that it has come to pass that Shaqiri had another stinker after a good game.
Yeah. You know, this is more of like the Red Bull that I remember from prior years. This I actually would consider to be more of like an out of character game for them, because largely this season they've looked quite good. They've looked quite composed. They're a physical team, but they don't strike me as a team that's looking to get into trouble. Whereas in prior years, I think of Red Bulls and I'm like, surely they're going to get someone sent off, because I feel like they're just going to go start a fight somewhere on the field. You know, we're going to have a match of soccer broke out during a street fight is the way that I heard someone once describe watching Red Bulls. And so this felt like a step kind of backwards for them in terms of on-field discipline. The fact that they didn't get scored on by Chicago, even up a man, is, I don't know if that's a testament to Red Bulls being good and organized defensively, or if it's like Tim said, that Chicago has no ideas the deeper they get into the final third. It could be a little column A, a little column B here. But this was one that I also considered a lock going into the week. And I have to say, like, I'm certain that Chicago is going to get a win. But I just, like, every week when I'm convinced this is going to be the week for Chicago, it still isn't the week for Chicago. So the week that I don't put, you know, money on a Chicago match of in some direction is going to be the week that they finally get a win. So what I'm really getting at here is I need to stop betting on any match involving Chicago in our, you know, in our three leg picks, because that's the only way they're going to get a win.
The Chicago fans will thank you.
Yeah. Chicago fans, you can find me on social media. You can DM me for my Venmo handle if you would like me to end the Chicago curse. But until then, the bets will continue on Chicago. So
I told you, do not put money on that team. I put money against that team even this weekend. But
how'd that work out for you?
Not great. They frustrate me to no end, because like they've been missing a striker. They finally go and get one, and he's not really the right guy.
Which is insane, because you know when Hugo Kuipers was signed, like, it was supposed to be the big signing. Like, this was supposed to be the guy. But how many times has that happened for Chicago? That they go out and
so
get
many
the
times.
Guy?
So yeah. Many times. Who was the striker before? Remember they got a big striker before Shabelko even. They got Shabelko, and he flopped massively there because they used him as a single striker, and he's a two striker kind of guy. I'm going to figure out who this is.
You can figure it out.
He was like a tall dude, I thought. But they had Shabilko.
They also signed four right wingers. You know, in Mueller, Torres, Shaqiri, someone else as well that I don't remember.
Had one more.
Yeah, because every single time they sign a player, it's for the same position. And, you know, fun fact, four right wingers, three of which being played out of position, just isn't a sound strategy. You know, in other news, obvious statements that we all knew tonight at 11.
Yeah. They had one other guy who I can't find. I could be just making this dude up, but he was like some tall white dude. Sorry,
you
don't
just
know
described
more about
like
him.
Every single so many Chicago striker.
Robert Berich. Do you remember him?
No, forget about
Berich. They signed him for a couple mil. He was supposed to be the guy. Couldn't do it for him. They got Shabilko in. Couldn't do it for him. Kuiper seems to be another one in that mold.
They got in Gaston Jimenez. He was supposed to be the best midfielder in the league. I mean, they hype up their signings so much. Zichos at the back, he was supposed to be dominant center back, defender of the year caliber. Couldn't really do it for him. Like you said, Torres. I mean, he was supposed to be here. I mean, like, come on. The best piece of business they've done is bringing in Jean Duran, who was a really hyped young player.
And then sold him.
Kept him for like a year, not even. Sold him on for like triple profit. Now he's playing for Aston Villa. Like,
wait, who is the person they who is the young homegrown goalkeeper they sold for 15 million?
Slonina. Slonina. Yeah. That was great business as well. Yep. And so like the scouting department, for me, this is too much failure from them. Wait, either it's the scouting department too much failure, or it's the decision makers getting this information and not making the right decision with the information provided. It's one of those two. It's either decision makers or the people providing the intel for the decision makers. Whichever one it is, figure it out, get them out, because this is not working. There is so many failures across the board. I didn't even mention Shaqiri. They gave him the highest contract before Insigne. He's been a complete bust for them. So that's all I've got to say on Chicago. And New York Red Bulls, they were a lock for me, but got the red card, and that changes the complexion of that.
Well, hey, look, Chicago being up a man, just like LAFC, could not find the back of the net. So do with that information what you will.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, Gavin, I'm noticing a trend here for us. We love to say a lot about the team that loses or the team that is not doing too well in this situation. You know, let's go to DC United 2, Orlando 3. You know, some say in the capital of the country, the most dangerous game was not man, but it was instead the Lions stalking amongst the cherry trees. Gavin, say something good about the team that actually won, which is probably going to be even easier considering you're an Orlando fan.
Okay, I'll start with Orlando. That's funny because most of my notes were actually for DC. But we got a big win on the road, 3-2. Duncan Maguire in the last, in stoppage time, gets a breakaway goal. DC had all their players pushed forward, and they lose the ball at the top of the box, and it's just two passes, and we're in behind, and Duncan Maguire is just automatic in front of goal. That's why he almost went to the English Championship for $7+ million, right? So great player in front of net. Really key for us that he got that goal, because we needed 3 points in this match. This could not be anything less. We've had that slow start to the season. And so that was really, really important. Honestly, though, I have to give some flowers to DC. They have one player with a superpower, and they are taking full advantage of it every week, and that is Benteke in the air. It's Benteke in the air. He scores off a corner. They crowded the area around Benteke. Galese tries to go and punch the ball, and he doesn't get there, and Benteke has an easy header into the goal for the first goal. And then for DC's second goal, they put in a cross, Benteke heads it down, and I can't remember who scored their second goal. I think it was their number 10, the new player. I can't remember his name. I'll pull it up here in a second. Pirani. Yep, it's their new number 10. Pirani gets on the score sheet. And so all comes from Benteke. So like, I have to give him his flowers, but props to Orlando City. They fought back. We got a goal off a corner to make it 2-2, and then, like I called out, Duncan Maguire, 3-2. So big win for us. We fought through it. We had some adversity for sure in this game, dealing with Benteke and his threat. He's a bully up top, and happy we got the 3 points.
Gavin, let me ask you this. Is it a sign of a good coach when they see that a player is good at something, and they just let the player do that every single match? Or should that be like the bare minimum for coaching in this league? Like,
we obviously had a plan. I don't know what it was, but we must have had a plan. We must have had a plan. But like last year, Benteke bullied us. I mean, it was ugly to watch how Benteke dealt with our defense last season. This year, we didn't do much better. You know, he bullied us again, just this time in the final third that led to goals. Last year, it was more he bullied us when he was winning the ball in the halfway line and knocking our center backs over. I don't know what the plan was. It clearly didn't work again. So, yeah, it's not great coaching. But we essentially just did the old we'll score more than you tactic
right
in this one. And we got a little fortunate. This wasn't any sort of tactical masterclass from either coach, I would say.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, Lassane's clearly doing better than Rooney in that he's getting production out of Benteke and letting Benteke do the Benteke things. So, I mean, they're going to get wins if they're letting Benteke score and set up another goal every single match for the season.
That's the thing, though. That's the thing. They aren't closing out games. DC have 2 wins, 4 draws, and 2 losses. And, like, everyone would say they're doing relatively well this season. And maybe that's just in comparison to last season. But, like, I feel like you'd think they would be, you know, a couple points higher up. They just can't close out games at the moment. So it's an interesting one to keep an eye on.
All right. Well, let's keep an eye on moving forward, Gavin, because we are hitting almost an hour and we're like through 4 matches, 5 matches now. So we're on pace to do.
All right. I'll be quick. Sorry.
No, we're doing great, Gavin. You're doing phenomenal. Look, you got to shake off the rust after a whole week off. So, all right, we're going to go to Charlotte 3, Toronto 2. Charlotte minting yet another win in a season where they seek to make a new gold standard for the Queen City. So my headline, right, like take the players out of it, right? If you were to tell me that Dean Smith and John Herdman were coaching against each other, I would almost assume you're talking about a national team matchup just between those two names, right? Like, international managers. And yet we have both of them in MLS. Dean Smith's done really good. Like, unbelievably well, I would say, given what he has in Charlotte, to get some of the results that he's getting, to have Charlotte playing, I've said it before about another team, but better than the sum of their parts. And it is better than the sum of their parts because, again, Gavin, who can you name on Charlotte's team?
Not a ton, but I can name some, obviously.
Right. But, you know, it's we're better at naming a whole bunch of players from other teams, right? Like, take DC United, who are middle of the pack this year. Guarantee you could name 3 to 5 players right off the top of your dome pretty easily.
Probably, yeah.
So, I mean, Charlotte, I might be able to name 1 or 2, but again, it's to me, that is really, really high praise for Dean Smith for getting these players who are coming back to look like a true contending team that looks like they're going to make playoffs if they keep up this pace. I mean, they might even make like past the play-in rounds. So, and then on the Toronto side, I mean, Toronto were horrific last year. No other word for it, right? They were horrific. This year, they started off really strong. They've cooled off a little bit, but again, Herdman has them playing in some form of consistent manner. He has an identity compared to prior year. These are clear, defined steps of improvement for them. Yes, it's not a win, but I mean, Toronto is now a watchable team. I no longer see that Toronto is playing and say, ooh, change the channel or, you know, change to a different match.
Right. We don't know the result of that one when they're playing, whereas last year, last 15, 20 games, it was like, oh, yeah. Yep. We know the result of that match. Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Gavin, did you just have an earthquake down there?
I just kicked my desk. Sorry.
I know. I just saw your screen shake like sideways. What's I'm like, oh, going my gosh. On? It's a magnitude 6.
Yeah, that's funny. Okay, so it's funny that you say that. It's funny that the episode's called Perfectly Balanced because I think both of these teams, for me, are in
a similar moment in time, right? They're both kind of bouncing back from poor seasons, as you called out. They both had some decent starts. They haven't been top. They haven't been bottom. They're right in the middle there, winning games, being competitive. And also, it feels like they're having kind of similar styles of play, maybe not like the same tactics in terms of like formations and whatnot, but almost like the same principles of play. Be difficult to play against, mid block, lower block when needed, pressing at the right moments, not a full out press by any stretch of the imagination, and just like really kind of, I don't want to say simple because that kind of takes away from the coaching, but just like almost like standard tactics, right? And so I just feel like they're both in this kind of moment together. And so to see the game come out to 3-2, it's like, yeah, that tracks. That tracks that it came out to 3-2, tracks that it went to the home team. You know, everything just kind of made sense in this match. So that was good to see. Charlotte looked good. Toronto looked good. Defenses weren't looking too good in those defensive moments where goals were conceded. There was a red card given up to make sure that Charlotte didn't full on go and win this game because there was a stopping a counterattack. So, yeah, perfectly balanced this match.
Yeah, I think as well, this should speak again to parity roster mechanics and, you know, this push working in MLS, where you have essentially teams with not huge, like stacked superstars, but just good coaching, consistent standard tactics that make sense. And you're putting out results against teams that, even if they have more, you know, big name recognizable talent on them across the board, you can still get results pretty much regardless of who you're playing, because ultimately, you know, there's not supposed to be a landslide between any one team and another. Supposed to be. I say this and we're right. Going to go see Philly drop 6 on DC this weekend, you know, reliving all their previous glory seasons. But, you know.
Against DC. Hey, just last thing, you know, talking about perfectly balanced, right? This game, both teams had 11 shots. Both teams had 5 shots on target.
You're going to tell me it's 50-50 possession as well.
I am not going to tell you that, unfortunately.
That's a shame.
57 for Toronto, 43 for Charlotte. So,
ooh.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's it for me. Oh, I did want to call out Abada for Charlotte. Looked pretty good. Looked like an offensive threat, something they haven't had in a while. Whereas Capetti, there was some, I don't know if you saw the drama with Enzo Capetti. Coming off the field, he got subbed off and he did not look too happy. So some storylines to look out for. Lil Abada coming in, playing well, getting a goal. I think he got an assist. I can't remember. But then Capetti being subbed off and not looking too happy about it. So keep an eye on that.
How many Charlotte fans are happy with his performance since being signed? So
0, I would hope.
Yeah. Maybe look in the mirror then, Capetti.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. We're going to go to Minnesota 1, Houston 2. Loons flightless as Houston is able to hold it down against them.
I like that.
Gavin,
I like that.
We almost don't have anything to say on this because Maddie wrote in a wonderful correspondence corner that we get to start with. And then, I mean, Houston is, we've talked about ad nauseum, what's going on with Ben Olsen. So, you know, I think we can be short and sweet on this, but let's hear from Maddie first.
Yeah, Maddie Kraus says, Minnesota should be disappointed in this weekend's result. She's obviously a Minnesota fan. No Ray. Can't be an excuse because I think we should be getting used to not having him. Should Ramsey choose to keep him on the team, he at least deserves to come off the bench. But to outshoot the opponent by around 15 shots and lose is painful. We have got to figure out how to convert. I'd love to see Tanny put in as a starter, maybe over Bongi or Sang Bin, based on how they've been playing, and Tanny knows how to convert. A plus from the weekend is having a super draft kid making his first start in MLS debut, and I thought overall he looked good and showed lots of potential. I think if we touch up our offense and mainly our in-the-box efficiency, we can maximize our potential. I was really expecting Minnesota to win this game. I don't know if they're having some injuries, but Minnesota, for me, have been one of the better teams this season. And in terms of like those tiers that don't really exist, they've kind of been at the upper echelon. And Houston have kind of been up and down. And so I was not expecting Houston to come in and get a win here. I was expecting a Minnesota or a tie. And so props to Houston for coming in and getting the result. But yeah, Minnesota had 24 shots. Houston had 7. So smash and grab there from Houston.
I picked Houston to win this. So I
really, yeah. Really, Minnesota have been good this year. You got lucky with that one.
I don't know if it's that Minnesota, you know, just like was throwing alarms to me, but like with all the news about Reynoso still holding out, like it's going to throw things into disarray for Minnesota. Like every single time, like last season, this happened as well. They had all the Reynoso news. They started off really strong, and then Reynoso's not coming back. He's holding out. Drama, drama, drama. Dip in form. Reynoso came back, you know, after they kind of stabilized again, and then they dipped right down in form again because guess what? You know, every single time that Reynoso drama happens, this team takes a nosedive. So yeah, I mean, Houston, I've been pretty reasonable. I mean, again, it's not like they're this amazing powerhouse, fantastic roster. I think Ache is still injured, if I remember correctly. So yep.
I don't think he started this match.
So again, I mean, they don't have, you know, your quote unquote star power, and Hector Herrera was amazing last year. I mean, he dragged Houston to some results, but they're still a good team without him. They're still competent. Ben Olsen is doing good things in Houston. He won them a U.S. Open Cup. I don't know what more you want. Like a Houston against a team that is having drama going on behind the scenes. It was me. Like, did I think it was going to look like they were being outshot by 15 goals? No, but I expected them to win.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. Well, don't want to spend too much time on that one. So I don't have anything else to say. Congrats to Houston.
Yeah. Congrats to Houston. Ben Olsen continues to make us look like fools when we were lambasting his signing all those months back. So
maybe Ben Olsen's just had a Schmetzer moment at a DC maybe. United. He was just there too long. Maybe that's what happened.
Could be. Well, we're going to go to SKC 2, Miami 3. You know, people who've been around the league for a while may remember that SKC used to be called the Wizards, but the real magic came from the Magician and his friends from Miami this weekend. Miami taking a 3-2 win over SKC. We have to do zero talking about this because we have not just one, we have two correspondent corners.
We have three correspondent corners in relation to this game.
We have two correspondent corners officially, and we have one honorable mention.
Yeah. 2.5, let's call it. But either way, to have three correspondent corners from one game is 2.5 is pretty impressive.
Right. Statistical anomaly.
Do you want to start with Miami or do you want to start with SKC?
Take us from SKC first.
Why? Okay. Okay, so SKC spins, Travis.
Yeah.
Sporting Kansas City has dropped 12 points from a winning position already this season. In 8 games, we have 10 goals scored against us after the 60th minute out of 13 goals. 10 out of 13 goals is insane. Unless we can shorten games to be 60 minutes long, we need to start using the bench more. Our main attacking three of Russell, Pulido, and Saloy are underperforming their salaries and need to start putting up numbers. Willy Agata gets lucky and is strong with his positioning, but his lack of skill on the ball makes him a center forward you can't depend on. Any game where one of Alanis Vargas or Stefan Afrifra doesn't get at least 30 minutes is a failure in coaching. So those guys must be really strong support guys. I haven't heard of either of them, unfortunately. Additionally, we've outperformed our XG by 4.6 goals. The indicators are pointing to it getting worse before it gets better.
It got worse in this game.
It did get worse, unfortunately, because they were winning, I think, twice.
They were, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were they winning twice? Was Messi's goal to make it 2-2?
I think,
or was Messi's... his to make it 2-1?
Wow.
You know me, I love my facts. Okay, you so it went facts. It went 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, Messi, 2-2, yep. And then 3-2. Okay, so they gave so away the lead. Things
that you proposed.
Correct. I'm a failure. Just like SKC. I wouldn't
call you a failure. I would just say that you're a bad fan of SKC.
Fair. Matthew Hanau 3 for Miami. Very, very disappointed. Okay.
It's a win. Very, very disappointed.
Matthew's talking about the Champions Cup. Let's just make that clear. Okay.
Only beat SKC by 3 goals.
Yeah, right. Very, very disappointed with the way we crashed out of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. The 3-5 in the back system doesn't work for this team, and for some reason, Tata insists on using it. However, the game against SKC made me feel a little bit better. Still much room for improvement on defending set pieces, but we move on to Nashville for the 63rd time this season. I've been interested with why Miami continue with this back three. And that just tells me that Tata Martino has some real concerns with their defensive ability.
I've got real concerns with, do they have wingbacks? Because that's a real question as well, for the record. Who are their wingbacks? Is Jordi Alba a wingback? Because he doesn't seem to play like a wingback.
He can't anymore. He doesn't have the legs, right?
Yeah.
That's the big concern. Jordi Alba's really good. I think if his main job is to just like sit and play defense, if I were the coach, I would almost like, Jordi Alba, you play defense. That's it. He's still quick enough in those like short moments to where he can kind of make up for any poor positioning, which he's not really going to have. And he's able to pass his way out of trouble too. And so I feel like he needs to kind of be the rock of the defense at left back and go from there. Like, funnel your press to make everything go down Jordi Alba's side. Don't put him in offensive positions. I think some of the things that cause Miami troubles is Jordi Alba getting caught out of position, or Weygandt, the right wing back, getting out of position as well. Never heard of him. So there's a wing back. Not sure if he is a wing back or if he's just pretending to be one, to answer your question. So yeah, the back three has definitely been a point of concern for me as well.
Yeah.
Long story short.
Well, and it's shown in Champions Cup as well, because they got exploited there by Monterrey.
Yeah, and just a little bit of immaturity as well with the red cards. I mean, the red card in the first game completely threw the tie away. So, okay, anything else on the game itself? We got one more correspondent corner.
That's right. Throw us an honorable mention. What could possibly be said from an honorable mention? Who could it be, Gavin?
It would be a Nashville fan. Super duper Wyatt. He says, Nashville's performance against Miami. So this is, you know, looking ahead to next weekend. Nashville's performance against Miami is going to be pivotal going forward into the season. Coming off a 13-day break, they had the time to fix on-field and off-field issues. Fans aren't necessarily looking for a win against Miami. We just want to see some chemistry and effort from the players we love so much. These next three games are going to be a big test for Gary and what he's trying to do. I know I've been getting tired of talking about coaches, and we don't have to go deep into this, but I do think Gary is in that zone now where he's got to start putting out results, or he's gone. That's all I'll say on the matter.
Yeah, if the hashtag Gary out, nonverbal cue that I was giving Gavin there, which does not come across in an audio only format, if me explaining it was not enough Gary out, I think I'm officially Gary out at this point. I know why it says Nashville fans are not necessarily looking for a win, but I feel like at this point, if Gary's not getting wins, that seat should be getting unbearably hot. Just full stop. Even a draw, that should be increasing the temperature right now.
Yeah, they're in danger of not making the playoffs.
No. All right. Well, let's move on. Gavin, I'm invoking the rule again. It's Dallas 0, Seattle 0. No goals, no fun.
Dallas.
That's it. That's a good summary.
They've been...
Stop. That's it.
They've been terrible this season.
Yeah.
Have 5 points. They have 5 points.
We have a really good correspondence corner that echoes roughly what I would like to say, but does it in even fewer words.
Okay, so Taurus 9596, she says, "We need a new coach," laughing emoji. "Maybe our roster is not built to play with wingbacks," exclamation point, laughing emoji. Man, two seasons ago, they were top of the world. They were going in the right direction. Or was that last season? Was that only last season? Was Nico Estevez's first season last season? Or am I going crazy?
I don't think it was, because last season was pretty dreadful. That was 2 seasons ago. Yeah.
Yeah, they finished 7th. 2022 is when they finished top 4. Yeah, they finished 3rd. Right, okay. That's right. 2 seasons ago, top of the world. Everything's going great. Last season, riddled with injuries, struggling, but they get through it, make the playoffs, successful season, yada yada. This season, wow. They've been a tough watch. I tuned into this game for a bit. It was hard.
Gavin, a Dallas versus Seattle match should be thrilling if it was any year other than this one.
Agreed. Yep. I tuned into it because I knew both teams were in a really bad moment this season. Seattle obviously coming off of a better one with their win against Montreal, but that didn't make everything better for them, clearly, because they didn't play well either. Both teams just looked like they were lacking confidence, unable to connect passes at times, unable to create chances. Excuse me, just overall, a really tough watch, a really boring game. Don't want to spend too much time on it.
Which is insane to me, because if you're a team that just won 5-0 against Montreal, how do you go from the confidence of what should be a 5-0 win, how do you drop through the floor in a week? There are deeper issues than just the roster at this point in Seattle, and I think at this point you have to start wondering.
Just saying. Yeah. To finish it off, 1.01 XG for Seattle, 0.77 for Dallas. Just in 90 minutes, that's not a lot, in all honesty.
So. No.
All right, that's all I've got to say.
Cool. Well, Gavin, I'm just going to say see above regarding the rules as we go to Salt Lake 0, Columbus 0. I hate that these are back-to-back. I wanted to have a fun byline. I was convinced, actually, going into this weekend, I took Columbus confidently in my bets. Extremely confidently. Did not.
Coming off a Champions Cup? Coming off Champions Cup?
I don't know about that one, boss. They don't play again for 2 weeks.
I don't know about that one, boss. But yeah, but they played this midweek. They played this midweek.
And they advanced, and they've got 2 weeks now to recover.
Yep. And they did not start their A-team. Did you see their lineup?
I did see their lineup, yes.
Sometimes I feel like I gotta wait till the lineups come out before I start putting money. I mean, like, I did not touch this game because I didn't know what was gonna happen in it. I feel like the only thing I knew was gonna happen is there was gonna be at least a goal scored. And that I would have gotten that one wrong too. I thought there would be some goals in this game. But no, 0-0. Honestly, I didn't catch this game. I didn't even attempt to look at the highlights. Yeah, it was a 0-0. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm not going to justify any more time on it. I'm mad about 0-0s. We shouldn't have three of them, especially when one of those had a red card in it early on and shouldn't have even been a 0-0. But no.
Next,
yeah. We're going to go to a beautiful place, Gavin. Consider in your mind's eye, you're sitting in Vancouver. You're in the wilderness. You look up into the sky. The night sky is over you. It's a beautiful, mostly cloudless sky. And you realize, looking up, that you are just insignificant under the, you know, vast expanse, the beautiful stretching, you know, glory of the galaxy. And you just feel small in your little place there in Vancouver.
I had no idea where you're going with that, but that... Boom, that was a good one. Yeah. You spent some time on these, man. That one was a good one.
I was proud of that one. It was the easiest one for me to come up with, too. It weirdly, the one that gave me the most trouble was Portland versus LAFC, for the record. That was the last one I did, because I just had to sit there spinning my wheels. I'm like, where do I go with this?
What do I do with this?
Yeah. Well, look, I eagerly anticipated this match. I blocked off my 10:30 time slot for this. I sat there. I was getting flack from some of my group chats because I was like, look, I can't talk to you guys right now. I have plans later tonight. They're like, we know you're watching your other team, Vancouver.
And they were right. They were spot on.
100% right. Yeah, I dropped everything I was doing. I watched initially great joy, and that joy shifted to agony. I will say I did bet on Galaxy for this match, for the record.
Galaxy, man, they're just unstoppable right now.
I love Vancouver. They're such a good team this year. They're putting together largely some very good performances. The Galaxy are just unbelievable right now, though. I would say probably best team in the West. Even if the standings did not reflect that going into this match, I'm going to say it right now. I think they finished top of the West this year, if they continue the pace that they're going right now.
Yeah, I think right now they deserve to be considered one of those upper tier teams in the league for sure. They've had a couple results a couple weeks ago where I'm like, are you guys pretenders? Are you guys messing with me right now? Stop messing with me. Start winning some games again. Because they went through a little patch where they were not winning, they were getting draws, but seems to be that they are back on course. Really good performance in this match, and really good performance in front of goal. Dejan Jovetic continues to just explode before our very eyes. I love seeing when a player just, everything he does works perfectly, and so he's doing that for us right now. He's putting on a show, and overall, the team's looking good.
If I recall correctly, I'm going to go dive into my MLS history here. I think Jovetic was the Galaxy player that in El Trafico scored a goal and then celebrated by jumping into the stands and like having a beer with the supporters or something.
I think so, yeah. And that's when he... Don't want
to... He was not doing as well.
No, yeah. He was not the star. He was not the star. He was struggling.
I think this was the Carlos Vela, you know, era still of
Yep. It was a while ago, for sure.
Yeah, like Vela was still relevant. Galaxy was irrelevant at the time, and that celebration, I was like, you know what? I guess good for you. Yeah.
I am frantically going to his Transfermarkt just to call out just how insane this run is, right? He has 6 goals and 1 assist in 8 games. Last season, he had 6 goals and 3 assists in 32 games. The season before that, 11 goals, 3 assists in 32 games. I mean, he is on a huge, huge trajectory right now. The season before that, 2 goals, 2 assists in 14 games. He came in mid-season. So, like, Jovetic is just playing out of his mind. I hope he can keep it going. I hope he can keep chipping away, because it's exciting to see. It's exciting to see. He's leading the line for LA Galaxy, and who knows? Is he their star striker that they needed and were able to just make themselves? You know, they bought him, but like they built him up. That's kind of what I mean there. And that's always cool to see as well.
I think the important item to note here is Jovalich is one of five players tied for the Golden Boot right now, which is insane to me. The fact that we're eight matches in and you've got Arango, Benteke, Jovalich, Lewis Morgan, and Luis Suarez all on six goals. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. I mean,
perfectly balanced.
Yeah. Love it. I appreciate that you're picking up what I'm laying down there.
All right. I have nothing else to say on the game.
Yeah, I don't think I have a whole lot else to say. Vancouver will be fine. I don't read too much into this loss. Galaxy are rolling, and again, I expect them fully to finish top. So, two really good teams. Very much enjoyed watching it. Glued to the screen for 90 minutes. Moving on to San Jose 0, Colorado 3. San Jose players feeling, you know, left washed up and quaking in their boots after capsizing within the raging rapids that are Colorado.
I like it.
Yeah.
San Jose are the worst team in the league. Yes. And that is why I clarified earlier. That is just, it's a fact and it's an opinion all at the same time. Crazy.
Yeah. I don't want to read too much into this for a Colorado win, because San Jose are the worst team in the league. But three goals is still three goals. It's still worth talking about. Colorado have a positive trajectory right now. We've been seeing some signs of life from them. Certainly signs of life compared to last season, which is interesting because both of us very, very bearish on Chris Armas being coach. So don't want to jump to conclusions too early, because I remain very skeptical in nature. But I mean, they have all the pieces to succeed. You have a Georgi Mihailovic who is looking pretty solid, pretty good. You have Maxo looked like he was going to be a good signing previously. Now we're starting to see a little bit more in the way of that good signingness from him. Zach Steffen included in Team of the Week, no less, from MLS today, which I, when Zach Steffen was signed, I said Zach Steffen's not even going to be one of the 10 best keepers in MLS, which is, you know, I'm still actually not convinced.
not looking like a good take that. No,
I'm kidding. But there's some really good keepers in MLS is the problem. I still think he's going to end up being outside the top five, but maybe he'll sneak into the top 10. Because, I mean, look, there's
some
really good keepers in MLS. So, anyways, thoughts, opinions? I mean, look, it's a win over San Jose. Like I said, I don't want to read too much into it. Colorado will take the points. You take them when you can get them, because this is a low-scoring sport, and 3 points matters quite a bit in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I think Colorado, I mean, the first goal is a giveaway from San Jose, right? They give the ball away, Colorado run in, and then I think they win a penalty. And that was, I think, really important to setting the tone in this match. Colorado get the goal, and they're kind of able to control the game from that point. And, you know, San Jose are pushing, but Colorado don't have to push too hard. And I thought they actually were pretty mature in the way they handled the management of the game itself. Early in the second half, they get a second goal through Navarro. And from there, it was like curtains for the game. Eventually, they get the third to close it out. And I think it was just really good game management. San Jose had chances in this match. There's a reason Zach Steffen was goalkeeper of the week. But
he was on the bench for Team of the Week.
Oh, team, sorry. He was on the bench. I thought you said he was goalkeeper of the week. But obviously there's a reason for that. But it clearly wasn't enough. And I just think overall, Colorado played well and held San Jose at bay.
Yeah. Look, like we talked about earlier, Lucha Gonzalez bailed a team out this week. It's just, you know, it wasn't FC Cincinnati.
Right, yeah.
The big question for me is, I think we're far enough in the season, we can start talking about who gets the axe first, right? Lucha Gonzalez, I think, should be in that conversation. I think, you know, Gary Smith probably should be in that conversation. Nico Estevez may be part of that conversation. It's going to be, we talked about it at the start of the season. I think there's going to be more turnover in the West than the East this season. And that's probably just going to be a symptom of the fact that so many coaches got fired last year. I wouldn't be surprised if Caleb Porter got the axe as well, just from New England being a really unbelievable organization in terms of how they're being run right now. But, and honestly, that might be for the better with them anyways. I mean, they've looked dreadful under Porter.
I could see it, ironically enough, being one of the two U.S. men's national team assistant coaches in Lucha Gonzalez or Nico Estevez. Those would be my front runners, just with the way the teams are playing.
Yeah. Oh, San Jose.
Yep. Sorry, guys. Y'all are bad, even though you have good players. And I like a lot of your players, but
yeah,
not doing good.
I mean, they have players that last year arguably should have been in the conversation for some player awards, which is insane to me. That
San Jose? Have,
yeah.
Who?
Didn't they have a Nathan, right?
Nathan? Yeah. Nathan. That's right. Yep. They don't have Nathan. I think he left. I think that's part of the problem. Did he leave? Surprised. Or maybe he's injured. Maybe he's injured. I just haven't heard a lot from him this season.
Gavin, look, this is the internet. What we say is factual in nature, so let's make sure we say the correct factual statement.
You must be thinking of two seasons ago with Nathan. This article from February 9th of last year, Nathan's out indefinitely with a right ACL. That must have been two seasons ago with him.
I don't know. You tried looking at matches from last season?
No, I haven't.
Hmm.
Sorry.
Crazy. But look, point being, they have players that are good.
Yeah, Nathan's on Seattle now. Yes. I do like some of their players. Espinoza, I like Ebobese, I like Uliel. Was
super hot last year.
Yep, I like Yarbrough as a goalkeeper.
Who's their keeper?
Yarbrough.
No, last year, who was their keeper?
Daniel?
Daniel was pretty good last year, too.
The goalie, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
Yarbrough's a downgrade, if you ask me.
I think that's fair. I still think he's a good goalkeeper, but... Okay.
Yes, okay. Enough about San Jose. This is a lot of discussion for a team that scored zero goals.
Yes.
And gave up three. We're going to go instead to the hottest controversial conversation of the weekend, including me relearning what constitutes a foul throw. Atlanta 2, Philadelphia 2. Some people, when I was growing up and living in Atlanta, I heard them say, "The South shall rise again." But I would say at the end of this match, Atlanta were in fact lucky to not be sacked by the Union yet again in their history, at home no less. Gavin.
That's crazy, Russell. That's crazy. Okay. Okay.
It's my best work yet.
Yeah, that's something.
I'm digging into my childhood on this one.
You really are. On to the Sunday games. Okay. Atlanta United 2, Philadelphia 2. Let's start with a foul throw.
Oh, go ahead.
Just quickly.
Yeah.
For the longest time, ever since VAR started, years and years ago, I've always thought of this situation. What happens when a player throws the ball in, It leads directly to a goal off a throw-in, and the player's foot is over the line. Or his leg comes up. Do they take the goal away? Is that an allowable event? I have always thought of this exact scenario. I've got my answer. They will not take the goal away. It is clear as day. It is an illegal throw-in. The goal should not stand. I don't know why refs don't call it anyways. I get when it's like the foot comes up at like the last second. It's like, okay, whatever. Like, whatever. But this is a throw-in into a box. It's a dangerous opportunity. Like, I just wish refs wouldn't be so afraid to call this foul. I don't know what it is. Like, so I'm not surprised it didn't get called on the field. I'm more surprised that VAR didn't catch it.
I am not surprised that it was not called on the field, because they never call foul throws, refs, until, you know, they identify one player and they get it in their head that that's the player they want to call all the time. And we know this because as Arsenal fans, there was a player that was constantly getting called for foul throws because the referees wanted to, you know, make a point that they were calling these. And this was like the one player that they decided to call out on it, despite the fact that tons of teams do foul throws week in, week out. Side note, social media has re-educated me. The foul throw rule is as long as some part of the foot is touching the line. You can actually have your foot into the field, by the way the rule is written, as long as some part of that foot is on the line.
It's a legal goal?
That is a legal throw.
Per
the laws of the game, on the throw in, you can't have your foot past the line, but as long as some part of the foot is touching it, you're considered on the line.
Right?
Social media. That's what they do. Because I was with you. I looked at that. I looked at multiple throws and I was like, those are foul throws. And social media has re-educated me that the foul throw includes the line as part of what is considered a legal throw.
You just rocked my world with that one.
What? Gavin,
when?
Everything about it is the gift that keeps on giving, from our headline all the way till now.
That's insane. Okay, well, have you seen the picture? Do you think his foot is on the line?
Marginally, like by millimeters, if that. But here's the thing. If they are saying, you know, that VAR has to do clear and obvious, and we know they won't go back in VAR for throw-ins, I think throw-ins are not a VAR-able offense, then I think, again, it's not clear and obvious. If you have to zoom way in into pixels on the picture, they're not going to call it.
All right, I stand corrected. I was wrong.
Think it was Andrew Wiebe who shared that specifically, I want to say. Or I'll say one of the pictures.
His mentions probably got murdered after that throw-in, since he does the instant replay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that's the throw-in incident.
Anyways, yeah, that's...
Do you want to take on the last, or the, not the last goal, the offsides incident?
So social media, the people who deal with images, took their best stab at it. I will tell you this, Gavin, the claim, according to the people who model offsides in the very limited information that MLS gives, claim it was about 9 inches offsides. Here's my stance. In real time and on the broadcast and on the replays available, it looks onside. And or it looks so unbelievably close that I'm blown away that they called it. However, I think this is more of just a testament to the fact that you need more camera angles. Full stop.
And I know where my stance is on this. If you're not going to have the technology, have more camera angles. I personally like no technology, so I kind of want more camera angles. but you can't have it either way.
Right. And here's my thing. Even if they had more camera angles, if the standard is not clear and obvious from what is available to VAR in those replays that they showed, do I think it looks on in the angle? Yes. Do I think it is on so clearly and obviously that I think you could definitively overturn it? No. I think it looked on in the angles. But I'm not the referee on the sideline, and I'm not the one that makes the decision on it. So I understand why it was not called for review. I understand why they said, nope, just move on.
And 9 inches, like, that's...
That seems significant.
That's pretty significant. Yeah, usually you see some of these with, like, 2.2 inches, and it's like, yeah, you can forgive a ref for getting that wrong or something. Yeah. But, like, 9 inches, yeah, that's... Usually, that's visible with the naked eye to see if someone's offside or not. So, I guess it was a good call.
Yeah, well, turns out.
Per the technology that social media has. We do have a correspondent corner. Yeah.
From Bryce.
Yep, Bryce. B. Leslie 19, who was on last week. Atlanta, I expected 0 points pregame, and then the game script had me disappointed we didn't walk away with 3. The refs were rough in this one, ending the game when Philly had a chance on goal in stoppage time. That was crazy. Did you see that? When the ref ended the game? That was crazy.
Illegal. I disagree vehemently with that call.
Ending the game that there?
That's
insane.
Let everything else notwithstand, that decision alone is a not serious league type decision.
That was a ref who did not... He wanted to get out of there. He did not want the away team to win. He was like, his clock's going, and he's like, I'm not having any more controversy.
Yep. And that in and of itself was controversial.
Yep. So ending the game when Philly had a chance on goal in stoppage time, illegal throws were the main two. Turns out. Was not illegal. That's insane. Just one to forget about. We'll see if Miles Robinson is able to play on turf next Saturday in his first return home.
I, Gavin, would like to note, I believe wholeheartedly that someone would not lie to me on social media. Insert sarcasm footnote here. I went and fact-checked specifically from the FA the procedure of the throw-in. Law 15, the throw-in, says right here, the procedure: at the moment of delivering the ball, the thrower must stand facing the field of play, normal, throw the ball with both hands from behind and over the head from the point where it left the field of play, also normal. Key item here, have part of each foot on the touchline or on the ground outside of the touchline. So it does not say behind or outside the touchline, just says part of each foot on. Part, not all. Part.
So part of each foot on or behind.
Correct.
The touchline. Okay. So if his foot is deemed on the touchline. Okay. And that was from IFAB?
It's from the FA.
Okay.
The Football Association. Laws of the Game and FA Rules. Oh, it says right here, and it cites IFAB Laws of the Game 2023-2024.
Yeah. IFAB. Yeah. So that's the...
So there you go. That's an official rule.
Yep. Okay. Wow. That's a new thing learning for me. Anything else from you from the game? I mean,
no.
2-2, two good teams. I think Atlanta are a good team this season. Lots of controversy from the ref.
Philly got robbed, in my opinion.
Okay.
Philly not winning that destroyed my bets. Heartbroken.
Betting on a team to win at Mercedes Stadium is crazy to me. Just saying.
Well, I think they should have won. And can argue maybe they should have absolutely had 3, but
it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Last one, St. Louis 1, Austin 0.
Ooh, Austin left feeling green with envy
as they see their gateway to a new season blocked off by the city of St. Louis.
All right, we got to do these going forward. I'll throw some in next week, but these are awesome. I love these. We'll have to come up with different things each week because we can't just keep doing like Gateway or Rapids, right? Or earthquakes. Oh,
you better believe a Panera Bread reference / St. Louis Bread Co. reference will be in.
It's got to be used, for sure.
100%. When they play Montreal, it's going to be the Bagel Showdown.
Gotcha. Understood. Yeah. Yep. I'll be honest, I didn't catch this game. I don't have anything on this. I'm sorry.
This to me is just more Josh Wolf's feet should be very hot. Joao Klaus gets the goal for St. Louis. It took them a hot minute to get it there, but at no point in time when I was watching this did I think to myself St. Louis are going to lose. I'll be honest. Watching this match, like, I had full faith going through this entirety of the match. I was like, St. Louis are getting a result out of this. Just is what it is.
Also, so you, not a good okay. team. So you saw this game and that doesn't surprise me, considering Austin had two shots in the entire game.
Right. I believe their total XG in this match, at post-match when they popped up those statistics, was 0.04.
Wow.
It was dreadful.
Wow. 0.04. Dreadful. Holy cow.
Horrific. Like, I'm sorry, but that is...
Yeah,
it's unacceptable. Like, at that point, you may as well have just not taken the two shots on goal.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's all I really have, unfortunately.
Austin, St. Louis deserved to get a win. Austin are not a good team as well this year.
They're in the San Jose FC Dallas kind of category for me right now. Yeah. They're just terrible.
It's weird. It's like either the majority of Texas teams are either competent or terrible, but it's like you can bet on them not being evenly distributed. It's never like there's a good, an okay and a bad Texas team. It's like either you have a good and two bad Texas teams, two good and one bad, or like three good and zero bad, or three bad and like, no, it's never evenly distributed. It's always weighted one way or the other, and it does not make any sense, and I love it.
It's just this league. Perfectly balanced. I'll say it one more time.
Perfectly balanced.
I'm just now realizing I haven't placed my my three leg.
I haven't placed any three legs either, so I think this is a pretty good live reaction. Gavin, I'm pulling up the odds right now.
Okay.
Just to take a quick look, mm-hmm. see what's jumping out in terms of the obvious locks for the upcoming week. I think Columbus Crew hosting Portland Timbers, personally, I like those odds. Inter Miami hosting Nashville, I like those odds. Toronto plus 120 over New England Revolution and Toronto's at home, instant take.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's one.
That is an instant lock. Colorado
Houston
Rapids.
Houston over Austin.
Yeah, Houston over Austin, instant take, and Houston's at home. Yeah, I would take that as well. I mean, Chicago Fire, RSL, I've got to bet on Chicago, right? Like, they've got to win eventually.
No. Do not take Chicago. No way. No way. Don't do it.
All right. Well, hey, look, there's some very, very interesting matches that I don't plan to touch with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, agreed.
Later on, such as LAFC versus New York Red Bulls or Seattle versus Vancouver. Not touching that.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I'm taking a very, 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 very safe, three leg on this one. I'm going to go ahead and say I'm going to bet on Toronto over New England, Colorado over Dallas, and Inter Miami over Nashville.
I'm going even safer. I think Toronto over New England, Colorado over Dallas, Houston over Austin. I know it's a rivalry match, but if Houston don't get a win against Austin at home, I don't know what this league is anymore.
I thought I knew what this league was, and then this weekend happened, so.
Yeah. Yikes. Okay.
Very interesting. All right. But Gavin, I don't know if there's anything else to say, you know? I mean, I feel like at this point, you just gotta, like, hit the music. You gotta start seeing yourself out, winding down for the night. We've been going for, once again, almost 2 hours. We're really consistent about this.
You know, sorry, guys.
I want to thank the listeners, as always. Everyone who's made it through these really long episodes, we appreciate you for sticking around. Everyone who hops into the live stream throughout this actual recording, drops the occasional comment, interacts with us, we appreciate you as well. Gentle reminder, if you do want to be part of that, we're on 9-ish on Mondays. We try and tweet it out as well. We welcome everyone in here. We'll try and respond to comments as we see them. So if you've got something on your mind, you want some opinions on it, if you just want to harass us and give us a hard time, we welcome that too. We love all of our listeners. We love everyone who continues to support us. Gavin, most importantly, I want to say we here at the podcast love and appreciate you. We're happy to have you back after your hiatus of one whole week. Didn't feel quite the same without you, so it's good to see you here. Remember, you can find Gavin on social media at LionsBlog1. You can find me on social media at Mr. Danger Russ. And you can find the podcast on social media at MLS Now Podcast. And of course, on the website at MLSNowPodcast.com, where we have our contributors who you can hear their takes here on the show, but you can also see long form content from them on the website itself. Gavin, listeners, till next time.
Till next time.